Welcome to the Say Network podcast. I'm Jim Sparks. I'm here with Megan Villalpando. Do I say that correctly?
I can't even say my own last name correctly.
And Abraham Guevara. Do I say that correctly?
You said that perfectly.
Excellent. We have a great episode today. We are going to sit down with the members of Surround the City. They're the divisional worship band for the newly formed California South Division. Surround the City is leading worship at WYI this year. Actually, this is where we're recording it, at WYI.
Woohoo!
Yeah. And they're here, and we're going to talk about different aspects of worship, like starting a group, leading a group, and developing a group. And youth culture news, what do we have? Oh, I guess I'm going first. This is just a random thing, but again, very relevant thing that we need to be very aware of in youth culture. But according to YPulse data, 57% of 13 to 17-year-olds have seen fat shaming in their everyday life.
Hmm. Wow.
And I think it's easy. You know, there was a period in maybe the 90s where it was real popular, corresponded with your mama so fat stuff. Yeah. And so fat was kind of a joke for a long time. And, but it's a very serious topic. And I think it desensitized a lot of us into that. And to the fact that that many, 13 to 17 year old and an incredibly impressionable time in their life, experience fat shaming is, it's staggering. It's alarming. And actually in the church, we talk about self-worth and that kind of stuff a lot, but we don't talk about just kind of being mean like that, as far as specifically fat shaming. So, I don't know, just kind of one of those eye-opening things that, you know, we're not that age. And so, we have to be very sensitive to that. That's a very sensitive topic. And there's no actual resource given to help with that. But again, just a kind of a youth culture nugget that we need to be very aware of that is alarming. And it could cause a whole host of issues, particularly with body image and stuff. So be very aware of that.
I think that's good as youth leaders to be aware of that, just be sensitive to people and be willing to listen to somebody who wants to open up about something like that or you know, people who've gone through sorts of bullying and abuse. Just be open to it. And it could be something that you don't think is a big deal, but you know, it is to them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a real big deal. And so even just, you know, you could think of simple little jokes that you think are funny that, they're not funny.
Right.
And so we have to be very mindful of that.
Or things like that.
Sure.
You might use.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it also could affect programming as well. So if you know people in your youth or your teen group or something like that who are dealing with some of that, maybe they're being bullied at school or something like that. I don't know. Maybe you address that in talking, just open up the conversation with the teens about, you know, how do we address this? How do we approach this? What do we do when our friends are picking on this kid or something like that?
Yeah. And you think about it, even if you go to camp and see some of the skits, some of the skits is someone has stuffed themselves, with a bunch of pillows. And the joke is that they're fat and making light of something like that or making fun of it.
Right.
We need to be sensitive on that.
You just
topic.
Singled somebody out. The rest of the week.
Absolutely.
And
that's scary.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to do a plug for Service Corps since we're at WYI, and our Service Corps teams just got back from Puerto Rico, from Lithuania, and from Chile. And we actually have a team going out in just a couple of days to Argentina. But I just want to say that the applications for Service Corps next year, Summer Service Corps, are going to be available on our website on servicecorpswest.org starting October 1st. And there's a lot of reasons why I, selfishly promote Service Corps. It's my job, one, but two, it's such a leadership development opportunity. We just finished service corps debriefing, and people came back just really confident in their ability to lead and just to minister to people in their corps, and they're just really motivated. So if you have youth in your corps, you have to be over 18, between the ages of 18 and 28, but if you have people who are just really wanting to kind of take that next step and work on their leadership skills and their ministry skills, Service Corps is a great opportunity for that. So, again, applications will be available starting October 1st.
Yeah, it's an incredible program. And I've over the years just seen not just life change spiritually, but actual life changes. People who wanted to do something came back from Service Corps going in the complete opposite direction, and it's just a really, really cool program to get involved in.
Awesome. I have a Instagram recommendation that you all should go check out. I have two, but the first one is CRTV Church. They post a lot of amazing designs. I grew up in a time when the peak of Christian design was knockoff t-shirts.
the Reese's one, the Tide one.
Yes, yeah. That was the peak of Christian graphic design, but we have come a long way. And if you want to see some amazing faith, I don't know what to call it, faith-based, just awesome design that is about, you know, Jesus and God, check out CRTV Church. And then also off that, if you want to see some really cool design on Instagram, there's a good friend of mine named Eric Rodriguez.
Now here it comes.
Who, he has some awesome stuff, and you should go check his stuff out at Right Hand Lettering. We will post the link in the show notes. And
he's an alumni of ours.
He is.
Our department. And that's the first time we've publicly said that.
Yes.
But he is a very gifted lettering artist.
Very good. Yeah, just his right hand, though. His left hand's a mess. So
yeah.
No. So, yeah, go check that stuff out and get inspired. If you start getting into things, let us know, and we'll share your stuff, too. I think there's people out there who are a little shy about it. And this WII, we've actually seen some of our other people in our department step up and do some lettering. And
I know. I was like, holy smokes.
Yeah. Left
hand lettering. I know, left right hand lettering. It makes me feel unbelievably inadequate with a pen.
Yes.
Given what we could see from our department. It's really
me
remarkable.
Too. My handwriting is atrocious, and I have the like most shaky hand ever. So I admire anybody who can write pretty, yeah, and do awesome design and all that fun stuff. So go check that stuff out. And that's it.
We're good. Now surround the city.
Yeah.
We're here with the members of Surround the City, the worship team from the California South Division, newly formed California South Division. So I just want to go around, and if you guys could just share a little bit about who you are, where you're from, and then also what your role is within Surround the City.
My name is Amari. I'm the keyboard player, and I'm from Brazil. That's it.
I'm Izzy. I play guitar, and I'm the musical director, and I go to the Pasadena Tab.
I'm Adrian. I'm from Long Beach, and I play the drums.
I'm Francisco. I'm from Long Beach as well, and I play acoustic guitar and sing.
He's also the worship leader. My name is Hannah, and I go to Pasadena Tab. I am a vocalist on the team, and I help with just vocals in general and harmonies.
My name is Caleb. I go to the Pasadena Tabernacle Choir, and I play the guitar and the keyboard, and it's a lot of fun.
Sounds like fun. So before we get into the topic of worship, today we're going to be talking a lot about different aspects of worship. We want to give our listeners a chance to get to know you guys a little bit more. So we're just going to just go for it. And let's just talk a little bit about what has been your most embarrassing sort of worship like fail or worship story. It's totally up to you. But yeah, anybody want to share?
I got you, Megan. So mine isn't necessarily pertaining to like contemporary praise and worship or anything like that, but I remember one year we have this brass band concert that we do at our core every single fall. You guys should come check it out, and if you do, I'm happy to sell you tickets because we've always got to sell like 5 or 6.
They usually give a bandsman of the year during that time, right?
Yeah, I'm definitely going for it. I'm in the running. I'm always behind Jim for some reason, though. Right, so well,
can't win them all.
Anyways, we were doing this piece. It's written by Kevin Larson, and there's this part. I was playing percussion. I usually play the cornet, but I was playing percussion, and there's this big bass drum at the end of the piece. It's like one of those Lion King things where the bass drum is just like all on its own. So I gave it everything. I played it super loud and super well. And the special guest for that concert went to acknowledge Kevin, who was playing tuba, except Kevin was right in front of me. And he acknowledged Kevin in front of the audience. And I don't know why I did it, but I took the acknowledgement. And I definitely bowed. Definitely bowed. And it was fantastic. So that would be my probably one of the bigger fails in worship. I've had many, I'm sure.
That was a really funny moment.
Lots of people enjoyed it. It's recorded if you want to see it at some point in time. You can, you can go back to it. Yes, exactly.
Hannah. Oh, I might even know this one. Go.
Everybody's pointing at me right now, which is the only reason I'm going. I have also had many worship fails. One of them was it last year? Or two years ago. It was 2 years ago. And I have to say, though, that before I tell the story is the song that I messed up on, not we. We had just practiced it one time that day. So semi-excuse, maybe not an excuse. Anyways, long story short, we were coming to the bridge of the song. What song was it, Izzy? Go?
It's that
no.
One that Captain
Never
Jillian
Let
hates.
Oh, what's it? Anyways, Bethel song. Jen Johnson sings it. And we were coming to the bridge. I realized I didn't know the lyrics at all. And I just needed the first few words, just the first three. That's all I needed. If I had, you know, the first three words, then I was going to be fine. So I'm thinking, okay, you know, I'm trying to stall for time. The band's playing. People are starting to notice that, you know, that we're not singing. So I ask Paco, was it? Yeah, I asked Paco to sing that part, right? Yep. Chime in, Paco.
Chasing you?
Yes, she did. Yeah,
chasing you,
the song was Chasing
You. There we
me,
go.
And yes, you did ask me to sing that.
Because I didn't know what was going on.
Paco just shook his head.
And he just said nope. No. But he had the iPad right in front of him, so that's why I asked him.
It was on the floor.
But nobody offered me an iPad or an anything. So then I asked Shalini to sing it. Shalini says no.
And the words were on the monitor, the back of the screen. So she could have looked up at any moment and just read them off that screen.
I also had them on my hand, but I refused to look because I was too
she had them on her hand.
I was too embarrassed because it was too obvious at that moment. So then we went into a prayer moment because I tried to stall again.
Yeah, she started, oh, my sister Shalini's going to lead us in a time of prayer now. In the middle of the song.
And then how did we get back on track?
You asked Shalini to sing it, and she handed you the iPad.
That's
and
right, in front of everybody.
Off the iPad, yeah.
And then we just went for it, and we just left.
Hannah, what about there was a time at the...
No, that's it. That's it, Jim. That was the only time.
No. There was something that... you said something at the core, prayer at the end of one of the worship sets.
Yeah.
It was something bizarre.
Yes, we... You know, we were in this like holiness moment, and in my mind, I was just thinking about, you know, bowing before God. But instead of bowing, I used the word, which I don't even want to use it right now because I feel like I'm going to mess up now.
She meant to say prostrate.
Prostrate.
Yes.
She must
yes.
Say prostate.
Yes.
This doesn't sound familiar to me.
Yeah. Yep. So half the audience understood what she was talking about.
And I'm sure she just chuckled nervously into the mic.
Yeah. That's a good one, too.
That was fun.
Yeah, that's two. Just the two in my whole life.
Anybody else have one that went?
Other than that, perfect. Ha ha.
Yeah, right.
Sour.
This one time, this is Amari, we were playing at a church in downtown LA, and the guest speaker was giving his sermon. During altar call, he came, oh, can I have the piano player come up and start playing the background? I was like, okay. So I came, he's like, into the microphone, so the audience could hear, he's like, can you play something in G? So I start playing something in G, and he's like, no, like, just G. Can you just give me a G chord and play on it? I was like, okay. Yeah, he said he's a worship leader. Like, I'm a musician. I know what I'm talking about. Just play in G. And all of this is having this conversation with me into the microphone so the whole audience can hear it. I'm getting embarrassed now. I was like, just holding like quarter notes on G. Fine. And then he takes the microphone away, comes close and say, do you know how to play Good Father? I was like, yeah, sure. And then I was like, okay, I'll sing that. But can you, like, can you play in G? Because that's the only way I can sing it. I was like, I got you. I'll play in G. And that was it. It was embarrassing.
That's a good story.
He just like called him out in front of everybody. It was pretty funny.
Well, cool. How did Surround the City get started?
It was 2011. I got hired by the division, and one of the things that I had to do was start a divisional praise and worship team. And so we held auditions, and just about all these people were original members. And yeah, that was it.
And why did it get started?
Yeah, I think they just needed a team to be consistent at some of these events. You know, you got to throw together a team every time you have a divisional event. It was just easier to have a divisional team do it.
And I think they also wanted a standard for a group and something that maybe folks that were learning how to do this kind of this kind of aspect of worship, something to shoot for, maybe something to aspire to, and maybe want to be in the group someday. There's some folks that we've invited to play with us often that also play really well, and at some point in time may even become members of the group. So that's good.
Yeah, and I don't know. We've had you at WYI for several years, modified versions, usually five. Modified versions. It's not the actual Surround the City group. But you also all play in your core worship bands. How did that get started? Did you guys start your worship band at your core, or did you join a group? Do you lead your group? Talk about a little bit about your core worship group.
So at Long Beach, we've always kind of had a worship group in some way or another, and for a while there, for maybe a year or two, we kind of had a semi like consistent group, and finally we had some people that came on board that started to kind of take leadership of it, to be in charge of the music program. Actually, our music kind of like director guy is actually Adrian, that's right here to my right. Yeah. And Adrian.
The listeners totally could figure that out.
yeah, it's Adrian, the drummer. Who knew, right? Yeah, so it's kind of cool. So Adrian was the one that, he's been leading it at Long Beach, and it's been going really well.
That's good. And what about you guys in Pasadena? How'd they get started? Did you guys join the group? Did you start the group?
Well, when me and Hannah started going to the TAB the same year, and Caleb had been going there a couple years, and I think we realized that there was several people that had some experience playing quote-unquote contemporary instruments that could do this sort of worship. And so someone took initiative and put the group together and talked to the core officer, and we started playing. And, we lacked experience, but it was good. And so over the years, we've just kept playing. And through the transition of the core officers, we've actually been used more and more. And so we play every Sunday at our core now. When we started, it was like four times a year we were playing or something. And the groups had pretty much the same. There's been some people coming in and out, but for the most part, it's been the same group of people for the last 10 years or so. And it's going well, I think.
That's good. What makes being in a worship band, particularly at a core, what makes it difficult?
Yeah, I think for the most part, not talking specifically about my core, but it definitely does come into effect at our core, is that a lot of people kind of just have this perception of praise team as being like for youth or something that you just practice Sunday morning and then you just do it and it's kind of always thrown together. And that's something that we've been fighting for a long time. And we have the privilege at our core to have a big brass band and songsters, and they practice every Wednesday and play every Sunday. And so we took that model and we practice on Wednesdays as well so that we have things happening ahead of time so that we know what's going on. And that's really helped us kind of, you know, without sounding cocky, I think take it to another level to most core, which just get together on a Sunday morning and they kind of throw it together. And yeah, they just, they do consider it a youth thing and there's kids playing in it. And sometimes it's not always the most qualified people. And so I think that's been helpful for us, but I think that's the biggest problem.
Hmm. And then, in Francisco at Long Beach, consistency, you talked a little bit about like it kind of got started and then went around. What's keeping a level of consistency of the worship band in the core?
I think it's having good leaders, having some people that enjoy being there, having people that really are dedicating time outside of Sunday to plan the songs, to plan out the worship set, that type of thing. So the consistency for us, it's like knowing songs ahead of time. Having somebody there that's, you know, planning all that out ahead of time, that's really been encouraging to our group and makes it feel more important when that's happening.
Did you did anyone of you guys, did you kind of learn your instrument because of being in a praise and worship band as you've gone?
Yeah, I think for me, I mean, you have an interest, I think, in your instrument since you're younger, right, at a young age generally. But there are moments that stick out in your mind of, oh, this is when I really started on that path. And for me, it was actually WMI, I believe it was 2014. Lisa Smith was leading the praise and worship track that year. And I remember that was the first time I ever sung harmonies in a group. And it made me really excited because, you know, I hadn't really done that before. And the sound that was coming out of these different singers that were learning was just really encouraging to me. Like, oh, I can do this. You know, I'm barely learning, but maybe in the future I can be like them. And I remember that actually Eric Rodriguez, who is not here today, but is such a beautiful and important member in our group. He was mm-hmm. one of the worship leaders that year. And I remember I looked up to him so much and I said, oh, maybe, you know, maybe I can be like him one day. So for me, that was sort of when it started, 2014.
I think you mean 2004.
Oh, yeah, 2004.
Add it
definitely
to the list.
2004.
Adrian?
I started playing drums through the church, through praise and worship, but it wasn't as like, oh, you're just going to join in and stuff, but it was more of like, if you're here on Sunday, you'll learn this and this and stuff, and yeah, just took on the drum thing from there. Yeah.
Nice. Now, you guys are, as a group, you guys do events, but you also sing at in your core worship band. Is there a different approach when you go to lead worship at an event versus leading worship at the core?
I would say absolutely. It's kind of like speaking, right? If you're speaking to a group of kids, if you're a kindergarten teacher, you're going to teach them or spend time with them differently than you would a group of seniors. If you're speaking to a group of officers, you're going to speak differently to them and have different topics than you would youth. So it all depends on who your congregation is, who are they, and what is the best way to communicate together what that central message is, which is Jesus Christ. And we all understand that same message in different ways. So how can we be most effective? So absolutely.
Yeah, I would say so as well. I think when we do like specific events, we try to choose songs that are relevant to our audience. Maybe that the language of the songs kind of speaks to the people that we're ministering to. So we pay attention to that. I would say like some of the songs that we do on a Sunday morning at our core aren't necessarily are actually songs that we do here with this band or at these events aren't necessarily songs that we would do at our core, just because it's a bit more like multi-generational. So we try to be like pretty aware of what songs we're choosing and what we're communicating and making it like relevant and, you know, language that people can understand.
Nice. How would if I'm at a core, just got started, I'm a new core officer, and we don't have a praise and worship band. What would you guys recommend to getting a praise and worship band going, making it consistent and, you know, thriving ultimately? How would you go about that process?
Well, like the gear and the instruments are obviously important. You need to have, you know, an amplifier, and a lot of people don't realize the amount of stuff that you do need, and it doesn't have to be expensive and it doesn't have to be state of the art, but there are just some basic things that you need. And you know, your DMD, if you needed more direction on that, your DMD could give you a list of things that you could use at your core if you didn't already have it. But as far as just making a successful, you know, I don't know, the bones of the group, I think really it's about setting expectations from the beginning and following through with that. And especially as a leader or as the core officer, making sure that you stick with those. Because generally you're going to get people that are really excited, and then a few months in, they're going to be like, oh man, this is a lot of work. And they're going to want to back off. And then at some point, if you're able to keep up and make sure that they keep coming, even though they might be kicking and screaming, at some point that's going to come around and they're going to see that it's successful because of the work they're putting in. They're going to be okay with putting in that time. And I think a lot of people think they want to be part of something easy, but they don't. They want to be part of something successful. And if they're part of something that's easy, but it doesn't ultimately work, if it doesn't sound good on Sundays, if it's not fun, even if it doesn't require a lot of their time, they're going to quit. They're not going to be part of it. So as a core officer, or maybe as a local officer wanting to start a praise and worship team, I think setting standards, not necessarily musical standards, but standards of, you know, attendance and standards of, you know, knowing the music, putting in a little bit of work away from the core, I think that stuff really goes a long way, especially keeping a consistent standard.
Yeah.
And you don't need, like, we have a fairly big group, and we're blessed with that. You know, we've got, if everyone's around, we've got two guitars and two keyboards and a bass player and a drummer and several different vocalists and stuff like that. But I remember that one of the most impactful moments of worship for me is I visited Cottonwood Church one weekend. They were having a weekend-long conference, and Michael Gungor was the special musical guest, and he was asked to lead worship for this one meeting, and then after the meeting he was going to have a concert. But it gets time for him to lead worship, and he comes out, just him, his acoustic guitar, and his wife. And he played his acoustic guitar, he sang, and his wife sang. And it was fantastic. It was all that this auditorium of more than 1,000 people needed. They didn't need all the other instruments or the lights and, you know, that kind of stuff, because at the end of the day, I think it's the spirit and it's the heart of worship that God wants. It's not necessarily about everything else. So to get started is probably easier than what people think, but it doesn't need to be all of these things.
Yeah, maybe a level of sincerity and genuineness, you know, that carries a long way. We had one of our biggest events that we do is boot camp, and the theme was bold, and we made a bold decision that our praise and worship group was Audrey Assad by herself on a little keyboard. And it like you're saying, it was such a neat experience. Just open a dang thing, Amari. He's trying to open up a wrapper forever. And it was just such a really, really good experience, and watching kind of worship unfold that way. And it was just one person at the piano, and I think a lot of it, what you guys said, it speaks to your audience and getting that right. That's really cool. For groups that are already established, how do you develop better leaders within the group, you know, and kind of develop the craft?
I mean, that's going to be different for every group, but really,
What you need is, again, someone that's willing to put in some time away from the core, someone that's willing to learn the music. And it comes with time, understanding that each person can play a unique part, and not, you know, musically speaking, people are going to step on each other's toes for a while. And having someone that can be in charge and say, well, piano, maybe you want to play this, and guitar, you want to play this instead. And, you know, be able to assign those things, that's going to musically be able to get you to a better level, is knowing the music inside and out, knowing how you're going to start and finish is the most important thing. So many people practice the verse and the chorus and they don't think about how it's going to end, and then it just comes to a crashing halt at the end of the song.
It's kind
of
like a sermon.
So I think being aware of those things is super important.
Yeah, and, you know, to add on to that, you need somebody who's going to disciple the people within the worship group too. You know, you can have something sound really nice and have the words and have the music be empty, right? You can have a great worship leader, you know, but somebody who might be full of themselves and think that it's about them, you know, and everybody look at me and how I'm leading and what I'm doing. But to be discipled and, you know, to spend time in the Word and to spend your alone time with God and just really grow in Him, and that will overflow automatically in the worship time. And that that's so important, you know, because if you're not doing that individually, what do you have to give to other people? What's going to come out of your heart? You know, if you're thinking it's about you, then that's all people are going to get. It's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, that's really good. So what's interesting to me is, so electric guitar, how do you guys practice, like drums, Adrian? How do you practice when you're not able to kind of go to a building every day? How do you do that?
It's super hard, especially if you just, because we play drums, like, you know, it's the loudest thing and it's like the biggest setup and stuff. But I think it's mostly taking the time out of your day to listen to the songs. In order to play them well, you have to know what part goes where, what you're doing throughout this whole song. And but you just grab a pair of sticks, you know, if you're sitting on your bed, and, you know, grab a pillow and put some earphones on, and you practice right then and there. And then afterwards you'll go to maybe church or something like I do and practice for a couple hours there and, you know, call it a day.
Yeah.
And a lot of what I think makes you better at your instrument, at least, are those technical things that you do on your own. You know, for drums, you know, you practice rudiments, practice patterns with your drumsticks that sort of allow you to either play different grooves or play different fills or things like that. You're at home practicing guitar, and, you know, you may practice some scales, you might practice some chords and those kinds of things. You know, same thing for the keyboard. I think the tricky part is then once you've practiced your instrument is then putting that together with other people, because it's easier to play on your own than it is to play with a group of people, because then you've got to be, or you should be, listening and trying to see how you can contribute to the song or to whatever it is that you're playing. It really is a team effort.
Yeah, good resources. What are good resources?
Song Select, yeah, YouTube. Song Select. Every corps has a CCLI license. Every corps in the Western Territory has a CCLI license paid for every year. You need to get your own Song Select subscription, but it's fairly reasonable for what you get, and that has almost any chart that you would need on there. YouTube, yeah, if you want to learn a part, you can find, for most popular Christian songs, you can find tutorial videos on YouTube for almost every Christian song. There's other websites, but those two really, I think, if I need anything, that's the first two places I go.
If I need to fix anything, then I just go to YouTube. nice part is you don't have to read anything anymore. But possibly random question, very random question. In sports, there is a lot of very superstitious people. They have to have things a certain way, a certain pattern, and park in certain spots. Who is that person in this group with things?
Is it me? I don't know. maybe someone else, because
Izzy is kind of OCD.
Yeah, I think it's Izzy for sure.
Different than superstitious.
Yeah, he's really particular about his picks. yeah, the key to his sound is the more expensive the pick, the better he plays.
He thinks we're crazy.
Yeah.
But I think he's crazy.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of things we do to kind of, you know, make sure that we play well. Sacrifice small lambs before we go on stage. Stuff like that.
Well, I've never done that, Paco. When you've when you've been around sacrificing lambs, I haven't.
Old Testament, baby.
Must have just been you and Izzy. But like we do things like a lot of places where we travel, we take our own sound equipment, which is probably more than what other groups do, and we like to have our own sound engineer. So I don't know if maybe that's what you're getting at, Jim. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't.
I'm just looking for the weird stuff, really.
I gave you some gold.
People did think it was weird that a few months ago when we went to play Camp Arnold in Northwest, Amari and I drove the van up 20 hours so that we could have our own stuff and feel comfortable on our own instruments and stuff.
I don't think it's weird. I think it's crazy,
Jim.
But it's weird.
I think I know what you're getting at, Jim, though. Izzy likes to sneak up on people in the group and attack them and tickle them. Paco in particular, because he's very, very ticklish.
His giggle, it's childlike. Brings joy to people's hearts.
It's the joy of the Lord.
Caleb just forgot to say that he does the same thing. When Izzy starts, Caleb just follows him. So
I deny that.
Hannah, you spoke earlier about worship leaders. I'm going to go back a little bit serious again. Sorry. You spoke about like discipling a worship leader to disciples. Can you go a little bit more on like what makes that worship leader like somebody you admire or somebody you want to try to be? Like, can you talk a little bit more about that?
Right. Well, I think the easy, I guess, more basic answer and what we see is the practice, and maybe that person has made mistakes and they've learned from it. And so we see ease of transition. We see words spoken well, and we say, oh, wow, that person's a good worship leader. But really, what is beneath all of that and the most important thing is their heart in worship, and what they have been through in their walk with God and their depth in their relationship with God. You can't really lead a congregation, maybe somebody, Paco, can back me up on this, I guess, where somewhere where you haven't been yourself, or at least somewhere where you're not willing to go. You know, if you're not willing to have that intimate, vulnerable space with God, then that's not going to come in through in worship, you know. And so that space and your heart with God is what really shines through, and what's the most important thing, you know, humility, knowing that it's not about you. And it seems like a really easy answer, but at least that's something that I've gone through and that I've had to learn. You know, oh yeah, of course it's not about me. That's an obvious answer. We know that. We know that it's about God, but sometimes we don't believe it. You know, we're standing there and we're singing or we're leading worship, and all you're thinking is about yourself. You know, how did I sound? Like, was that okay? And but it's not. It's 0% about us. And I think those kinds of really deep, beautiful, hard lessons that you learn are hopefully what makes you better, you know, where God is really touching your heart and breaking you and molding you in that sense. Hannah, this is for my glory. This is for my glory.
Yeah, I kind of going off on a little tangent, something that Hannah said that I think often gets like misconstrued. She said, you can't take them anywhere you haven't been yourself, or something like that. And I think some people misconstrue that, and they kind of focus a lot on their worship experience when they're up on stage leading. And I've seen some worship leaders that are getting really into it and they lose a connection with the congregation and they don't realize it. And so, you know, if you're leading worship at a core, you need to realize that leading worship, you're leading the others, and they're worship experience, I think, in that situation comes first to yours, and you need to make sure that you're still checking in with the congregation. I mean, maybe you guys that are singing up there can speak more on that, but making sure that you're not getting lost in what you're doing, make sure that you're still catering and serving your congregation is...
One, going off of that, something I remember Tommy Walker saying, which I really liked, was, you know, that when you're leading worship, you should have one eye on heaven and one eye on the congregation. Yeah, which...
Like a gecko?
Yeah, exactly. Which sounds, you know, which sounds a little funny, but yeah, I think that's beautiful and true. And I have another friend, Noah, who... instead of worship leader, he says worship facilitator. And I really like that because I like what that word has to say. Facilitating a space where there aren't distractions so that we can all come together to God instead of me first and everybody following me sort of thing. It's like we're all coming together and we're creating a space without distractions, and I really like that.
Yeah, I was just going to go back to what Hannah was saying a little earlier about like humility. You were talking about like discipleship and worship leading and stuff, and I think humility is such a important thing for somebody that's being, you know, a mentor to somebody. I think it's important, an important quality to have, and it kind of goes back to a little bit of what happened to Amari, which is when we were playing at that one church in LA, the guy that was preaching, he didn't necessarily have any humility. It was almost like a prideful thing. And the more he kind of spoke about it, the more he was trying to give direction to Amari, the more he ended up looking a little bit kind of foolish, you know, and his pride really, you know, came out. And it wasn't very graceful, you know, when everything kind of went down.
So Amari was gracious.
Amari was extremely gracious.
A lot of humility.
Yeah, he had a ton of humility for sure. So I think that's important. I think when you're just, you know, a leader, period, it's important to have some humility.
Yeah.
Have a lot of humility.
Yeah. I like the kind of like the spiritual aspect of leadership and worship leading. What about like the technical aspect? Like what is something that you appreciate on the technical side of a worship leader? Or maybe those of you who don't spend as much time leading worship but kind of sit in the, like have to like rely on them. You know, what is something that you appreciate that they do or something you don't appreciate they do? If you want to use a mic, Adrian or...
I think it's good when they have clear signals, like we're going to go back to the chorus, you know you're going back to the chorus together as a group, or we're going to go to the bridge or something. Some people are very unclear with what they want to do next, and everybody gets lost, and it's not fun.
You just have to be careful you're not like throwing up gang signs or anything like that in the middle of the worship set.
Yeah, I think Paco's very good at that, you know, just giving signs and stuff, and I think he... No, he does a great job, but it's also him knowing the songs and the feel of, you know, the atmosphere around, and you know, yeah.
And in that same sense, you know, putting yourself last in leading your group. You know, there's another example of humility in a more practical way, right? In being clear with your signs, remembering, okay, there are people that are relying on me. It's not just me with my instrument or my voice up there. There are people that are relying on me. And so putting yourself last in that sense and taking care of everybody's needs or as much as you can.
Yeah. It feels a little bit like almost the opposite of being like a star, right? I mean, when
absolutely.
The star is up front, everybody right. supports them.
Right.
You know, they're like, you know, Beyonce, it's like,
right.
You're the three of Destiny's Child. You're in the back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, you're you know? Actually.
You didn't think it was Destiny's Child this whole time. It was just Beyonce, yeah. really.
No, I think a good worship leader is last. That, yeah. you know, God is obviously first and the most important, you know, and your congregation and the people in your team, you are just facilitating.
Yeah, I don't mean to be like dropping names. So Beyonce, if you ever listen to this podcast, I'm so sorry. anybody else want to add to that? You were about to add something. No,
I'm Hannah's mic stand.
Nice. Wait, when you're leading worship? When she's leading worship, or just right now?
I mean, there's an idea. We could try that out tonight.
Human mic stands. All right, cool. One more thing. Like, when you guys are leading worship, when you or just when you guys are up there and you're part of a worship team, this is, I think, a common feeling, but like feelings of inadequacy. Like, how do you deal with those feelings of like, it could be inadequacy, it could be jealousy, rivalry, or just like, I'm better than that person. Like, how do we, like, we've all had these struggle with these feelings, because I think this is something that is common to musicians and people in any kind of like artsy farts, anybody, right? Everybody's like into, so like, how do you guys deal with these feelings and emotions? Is there, you know, something you do practically? Is it something that you, you know, what do you guys think? And this is a heavier one, but feel free to share. This is a safe space.
Adrian just passed the mic to me.
have you been feeling inadequate, Paco? Did you know something, Adrian?
Blast.
He's mouthing inadequacy. Yeah, I would say that maybe out of all of those, the one that I probably feel most, I can relate to the most, maybe like inadequacy, just because all of everybody that's in this band, they're just fantastic musicians, and you know, they have, you know, great gifts, and you know, have really, you know, worked on their craft. So I think what I kind of just go back to is that at the end of the day, you know, I'm following Christ and believing that he's, you know, kind of ordering my steps, our steps. And if I have this opportunity, then, you know, maybe God's at work in that. And I'm willing to step into that and just be obedient. So it's kind of that. That's what I kind of lean on and rely on.
I think that it's very easy, to your point, Abraham, to become critical when you are not the one that is playing or singing, or like when you're in the congregation, it's very easy to become critical of the people that are doing it. And I think I think that's wrong on many different levels. But in the past, particularly when I was learning to play and those kinds of things, yeah, I would oftentimes compare myself to other musicians and those kinds of things. But I think it's just important to remember that the gift that you have that has been given to you, and it's been given to you to glorify God. And you look at, you know, the story in the Bible of Cain and Abel, and one gift was accepted and the other one wasn't. And so it's a really important thing to keep in mind that the gift that you've been given, well, that's at least my desire, is that I want to give it back to the Lord, and I want it to be something that's pleasing to Him. And so in my life, I've had to look introspectively and think to myself, is this a prideful thing? And if it is, well, then I have to lay that down and I have to give it to the Lord.
Yeah. Anybody else struggling with pride? They want to come clean.
Yeah, I think, you know, as Caleb was saying, that I was kind of just thinking the same thing, is that God has made us. We are His creation. He has given us these gifts. Nothing that has been given to us we have deserved, or we have, you know, maybe we've worked on it, maybe we've practiced many hours, but these gifts were created by God. And so... So we have to give it back to Him, because they're from Him and they're for Him, and they're for you know, to glorify Him, to worship Him, and to build up the church around us. So whenever we have those prideful moments, you know, it's just thinking again, it was never about me. It's not about me, and it will never be about me.
Preach.
I know. I don't even know what to say after that. That was really insightful. I just want to say thank you guys for taking some time out just to chat. I'm hoping we can do some more, another episode kind of looking more into worship specifically at some point down the road. But until then, if people are interested in your music, where could they listen to more of your music?
It's on iTunes and Spotify.
Soon to be SoundCloud.
Yep. Paco's going to drop a single there, apparently.
Yeah. I'm dropping my mixtape on SoundCloud.
All right, well, we'll provide links below, minus the SoundCloud link.
Hello, Paco.
That's your husband, Megan. That's your husband.
Oh my goodness.
Tupaco.
New nickname.
We'll provide the links below. Thanks for being with us, and we'll see you guys next episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Skirt. Skirt. Skirt.